So Pastor Brenna is the quiet pastor at City Church Long Beach. Both of these pastors are from City Church Long Beach. An Enneagram 1 and a military brat who constantly moved growing up, a feminist since birth, which always created tension with the evangelical churches she was raised in. Her husband Israel enjoys calling himself the pastor's wife, but high school administration is his day job. Their four awesome kids, ranging from elementary through high school, get most of their parents' downtime. But there are magical moments when Brenna gets to just curl up with coffee and a good book. That sounds pretty good to me. And I don't have a bio for you, Dottie, but I will pass the mic now.
It is so good to be here today. Dottie, how about I give you a minute? Would you mind introducing yourself just a little bit? Like your family and background.
Yes. Hello. It is so great to be here with you all. I think Brenna and I, throughout the whole service, were just like, wow, this is amazing. There's so much energy here. So my name's Dottie Olson. I'm from Southern California. I have spent time on the East Coast and have gladly returned. I love the sunshine. I love being here. Have been working at City Church and I'm doing some pastoral work there. And then a little bit about my personal life. I am married and I have a 6-month-old and I am sleep deprived and happy. And that's basically what life is for me right now. If you've been there, you know the feeling of flicking under your eyes to keep the energy going. So yeah, but I'm so grateful to be here with y'all this morning.
I'm so grateful, right, for the coffee ministry.
Yeah.
The people who make coffee, you are the true stars.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Let's be honest. It is just so good to be here together. At City Church of Long Beach, we are a super simple, unfancy, but hopefully super welcoming congregation in Long Beach. You know, just 30 minutes on a Sunday, that was pretty nice. And in a lot of ways, you don't know it, but we have been friends with New City LA for just years and years and years because of some friendships that we have with folks who have been part of your church, particularly through the Los Angeles Christian Health Centers. And so we have actually looked to you for years as just like, yes, another church in the area trying to follow Jesus in just a radically welcoming sort of way. And so we have just been so encouraged by all of you over the years. And over the last 6 months or so, we've gotten to know Kevin quite a bit better and really just been all these great conversations with him about what it means to lead differently and to lead in churches like ours that are really trying to lean into this kingdom of God in a fresh way. And so that just makes it an extra special joy to be here this morning. For me, part of what I have done, my role, not only in our church in Long Beach, but some work that I do denominationally in other places, I love being in these kinds of moments with the church. Because the reality is, this is a big Sunday for your church. It's kind of weird Sunday. Our pastor is on sabbatical for 4 months. You know, like that's a shift. The status quo is shaking a little bit this morning, yeah? Yeah. And there's just something really precious and really holy about getting to come alongside as not part of the community, but a friend of a community and say, hey, I see you, and what you're feeling is real. It's valid. But here's something, as someone who has been through this on the side of watching my lead pastor go off on a sabbatical for months and going, oh boy, what's next? Here's something that I love being able to tell my friends in this situation. This is actually not just for your pastor. I mean, it's going to be great for Kevin. He's going to get to go and breathe and, making that incredible pilgrimage and write a book. And it's going to be good. But this is for you guys, too. This is for the whole community. Because when we get into patterns in relationships, even really good ones, after a time, it can just start to get a little stale. It can start to get a little like, we actually need to shake it up a little. So I don't know if you've ever had this experience where, you know, maybe you have a roommate or a partner, and you're in a good pattern with each other. You know who takes the trash out, right? And you know who makes dinner and who cleans up after dinner, right? Like, you've got the chores kind of all farmed out. And then one of you goes away for a little while. It could just be a couple days. Could be a couple weeks. And it's hard, you miss them. You have to do some of their chores. Huh. And you really realize how much you appreciate them. But you know what else happens sometimes? Go, ooh, I'm actually good at this one. I didn't realize I was good at paying the bills. I'm good at paying the bills. Right? And oh, I made like a new dish. I didn't know I could cook. Apparently I can cook. All of these new sort of skills, like just something about the shift, the shaking of the status quo actually releases new energy. And we find out there are new ways to relate with each other and new ways that our giftings can pour out and be developed. And that is what I'm excited about for you as a community, even on this first Sunday where, woo, the status quo has gotten shaken a bit. So this story that we're going to look at is one that I don't think it's preached very much in churches. It's partly because it's an Old Testament story. And sometimes, let's be honest, we're not exactly sure what to do with the Old Testament stories, particularly ones that are a bit violent, and this one is, and I can't solve all that tension for us this morning. But there's actually some other stuff going on in this text, in this story, this scripture, that I think can be so helpful for thinking about how we as communities follow Jesus, how we relate together in fresh and holy, invigorating new ways, and how we start to pull back from some lies about leadership and how communities are supposed to function that we inherit from our society and sometimes even from our past church experiences. So I'm going to read this story this morning. You're going to go, what is she talking about at first? How does this get us there? That's okay. Stick with me. We're going to get there. All right, we are in Judges 4 this morning. The story of Deborah and Barak, and we'll get to the end. Now Deborah, a prophet, the wife of Lapidoth, was leading Israel at that time. She held court under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim, and the Israelites went up to her to have their disputes decided. She sent for Barak, son of Abinoam from Kadesh in Naphtali, and said to him, God too holy to be named, the God of Israel commands you. Go, take with you 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun and lead them up to Mount Tabor. I will lead Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and his troops to the Kishon River and give him into your hands. Barak said to her, if you go with me, I will go. But if you don't go with me, I won't go. Certainly, I'll go with you, said Deborah. But because of the course you are taking, the honor will not be yours. For the God who is will deliver Sisera into the hands of a woman. So Deborah went with Barak to Kadesh. This is our story for today.
Yeah, what a good story. When we hear this story, for many of us, what initially jumps out to us is that this story is about a woman leading Israel. Deborah is the leader over all of Israel. And so a lot of us, we have some reactions about this is a story about gender. And it's a scandalous story because Deborah and Barak are not going to the gender scripts. They're going outside of them. They're coloring outside of the lines of patriarchy. And many of us are going, okay, what do we do with this type of text? Some people really find it problematic and others feel like it's an encouraging text.
Roar.
Yeah. So one perspective, John Calvin says, if anyone challenges this ruling, that being that women should not lead or teach, by citing the case of Deborah, the obvious answer is that God's extraordinary acts do not annul the ordinary rules by which he wishes us to bound. So for someone like John Calvin, he says, this is an extraordinary case. Deborah's actually an unfit leader. And Barak is a coward for letting her lead. So there are perspectives like that might be placed on this text. And the two of us, we don't really spend too much time with these perspectives anymore. We like to look at some other ones that are more generative and more helpful. Yeah.
Not an argument we're as interested in, but Google's awesome. If
yes.
Any of you have those questions.
Yes. And so, because we don't really... I don't really think that God cares too much about gender scripts. I don't think God is wanting us to, to go into this hierarchy of who's in and out, and to place these gender scripts on us. And there's actually more nods in the Bible that we're going to look to that suggests that there's something different going on. And so in Joel 2, verse 28 through 29, it says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams. Your young men will see visions. Even my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days. So while some people might approach this text with a limited script, right, about gender, we actually want to move beyond just gender. And we want to reimagine this text and find new ways to look at it that can go beyond a text about gender script and actually talk about something powerful that's happening in partnership and leadership here for Israel.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Dottie. I mean, it's really interesting, actually, for all that, like, the traditional lens is, oh, should she be leading or not? Is Barack messing up? Like, that's not in any way the sense you get from the text. The text is really matter of fact. This is what Deborah does. She's a judge, which makes her sort of a civic leader. Like, she's actually settling matters of law. She's settling disputes for the people. And she's a spiritual leader. She's a prophet. She's one who really helps the community hear from God together and interact with God, draw closer to God. This is her role. And the text just doesn't spend a lot of time. It's just kind of like, here you go. It almost makes you think maybe it wasn't as surprising back then as it actually is for us now in some of our communities. And certainly there are actually, if you look for them, traces of that sort of thing all through the Old Testament. But let's start moving towards that other question, that other lens that's possible. And let's ask what it actually means that Deborah was a prophet. What was her role? How was God using her? Well, a prophet at that point is one who really carries the Lord's presence and voice to the people and for the people in a special way. Just kind of, man, helping them settle and hear. And you get the sense that they need that help. There's just something she's providing for them that is really helping them connect with God differently. And I actually love how she describes her role as being a mother over Israel. There's something so interesting and so healing in that language for me, because she is truly, she's a leader, she's strong, but she's using her strength. She's using this role that she has not to lord it over the people, but to care for them in a really deep and a powerful way. Will Gaffney, who maybe some of you are familiar with, she's a womanist theologian, so coming from the Black tradition, and also an Old Testament scholar, and she has this incredible way of describing what it is that Deborah does. She says that Deborah suffered with her people. You see, a prophet is of the people and for the people. A prophet loves the people and leads the people. A prophet weeps with and for the people, and when necessary, bleeds with and for the people. There are a whole lot of folk calling themselves prophet and prophetess in this day and age. Some of them have it printed right on their business cards. Well, Deborah didn't have a business card. She didn't need a business card. That wasn't the point. And I think there's a word there, even for us today, right, that it's not actually about the titles. It's not about the seminary degrees. It's not about any kind of, you know, educational training. It's how do you love? Like, that really is the key qualification for leadership. Are you loving well? So Dottie doesn't know that I'm going to do this, but I want to talk about my friend Dottie, because Dottie is awesome, and she's really, really smart. Like, she is. She's awesome. And she has those degrees. She graduated from seminary back on the East Coast, and so she has an MDiv, and she has incredible experience, and she has a resume. And that is just not the primary reason that I'm excited she's here with me today, or that I'm excited that she's pastoring at City Church Long Beach. Like, that's not it, right?
I was nervous.
I'm not finished. I'm embarrassing you more. Because let's talk about, here's Dottie's true resume. Dottie's true resume is the way that she greets my 14-year-old kid with challenges every Sunday. And Dottie's resume is the way that she welcomes lonely people into her home and creates a space for them to connect and talk about the real deep things going on in their lives and in their hearts and find a new way towards God. Dottie's resume is the way she sits with a new mother who's had a traumatic birth and brings her coffee and just listens while she processes and while she cries. That's what makes Dottie a leader in the kingdom. Not anything else, right? Yeah.
Well, thank you, Brenna. That was really sweet. This is sweet. It's amazing, right? When we are in partnership together, it's just such a delight and surprise. Coming back to the story, I'm receiving it and grateful. But this story, let's look back into what Barak's insight is here. So Barak, he is being charged by Deborah to go into battle by himself. And he says to Deborah, no, I'm not going to go unless you go. And again, Barak is going outside of the norms, outside of the script, and going to an older script of ancient Israel, where military leaders knew that they needed the presence of God to go with them into battle. And that presence of God was often represented through a prophet. And so here Barak is with Deborah, a prophet, and he says, I see the presence of God in you. I don't want to go alone. I need you to go with me. If you go, then I will go. And it's really remarkable because Barak could have gone by himself. He could have been charged in this sense of leadership of this solo mission. But Barak wasn't concerned about his ego. And instead, Barak is so humble. It's amazing. And he leans into Deborah and says, actually, you have something special. Let's go together. And so again, this story is for us to be thinking about, how does this apply to our lives? How does this apply to our communities and our churches? And it's an amazing story and kind of a great model for us to look at with leadership. That it's not all about me. It's not all about that person. But it's this ability to humbly see the person next to us. To see that the presence of God is in our neighbor. There's something that they have that I want to learn from. And we ask each other, like, can you join me in this journey? There's things this morning even that James and Vera did where I was just floored. And I was thinking, I could have never done that. That was so incredible. The presence of God is in them, and we are in community learning from one another. And so Barak gives us this new imagination of leadership and partnership for Israel. And he says, where you go, there I will go.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It gets me so excited. Because then it feels like the next logical step, right, is that we start looking around. Like, really, you guys could look around today. You can look at the people right next to you and go, oh, yeah, the Spirit of the Lord is on you. And I will not go without you. Friends at home, I know we have friends at home watching too. The Spirit of the Lord is on you, and we will not go without you, right? Where do you see the God traces? How do you see the giftings pouring out? I mean, for Dottie and I, as she was saying, right, just sitting here this morning, it's already so just amazing and encouraging to see. Like, Vera, I was like, whoa, girl, that was like a sermon right there. That was awesome. Here's one of my favorite people who I'm like, oh, the Spirit of the God is on you. Who collected the little communion cups this morning? Oh, such a gift. Yes, thank you. Right? Like, I don't know, maybe I'm weird, but I'm one of the people always going, what do I do with my little cup now? And it worries me. Thank you for relieving my worry. We need each other. So many people came together just to make this one morning happen. Worship leaders, greeters, people making sure the communion supplies are there, the coffee, the little cups, the kids. Oh my goodness, the kids, right? We need each other. I will not go without you. And that's just here in the formal ways that you're doing ministry. You guys are showing up in other ways too, right? You're having each other over for coffee and for dinner. And when somebody is depressed, when somebody's hurting, you're going out into your city and into your community. We need each other. Okay, so now we actually get, like, you could think the sermon's just about over. There's a plot twist. There's a whole piece of the story that we haven't even gotten to that is actually the best part. It's the best part of the story because you never even see it coming. And that traditional lens, all worried about gender and stuff, it never gets there. It's so annoying. See, there's this problem that we have in churches. We often miss the point too. We miss the most important characters, the most important people and potential leaders within our midst. See, there's a character in this story that gets overlooked all the time. So here's that closing verse we ended our reading on, where Deborah is looking at Barak and saying, okay, because of the course that you are taking, the honor will not be yours, for the God who is will deliver Sisera into the hands of a woman. Clearly, right? It's Deborah. She's saying, hey, I'm going to get the glory then. No. The text, it's like, the Bible is actually good literature sometimes. Did you know that? Like, it's a good story. That's a plot twist. It's tempting you to think that it's Deborah, because she's the leader, right? It's not Deborah. No, it's going to be this woman named Yael, who will be the unexpected, completely unexpected hero of the story, who's the one who actually strikes literally the decisive blow against Sisera, the enemy. And the thing about Yael is she's not a warrior. She's not anyone impressive. She's not only a housewife in the story. She's not a leader. She's not a prophet. She's a housewife. But she's the wife of one of the enemy's allies. So she's completely across these sort of tribal lines. Like, she should be on the other side, we would think. But you know what that makes Yael for us this morning? It makes her that woman. It makes her that unexpected person that Jesus is always, always, always looking for. To say, they told you you were on the margins. They told you you were outside the lines. No, I shift the margins to you. I center you. I call you in. I make you the point. I make you the hero of the story. Doesn't our Jesus do that over and over and over again? And that's what we see with Yael. She is the one who defeats the enemy, who wins the battle for Israel. There's a theopoet, an abolitionist I like to follow on Instagram, Hello Camilla, if anybody wants to look her up later. And she wrote this incredibly beautiful poem. And one of the things that I love about it is she's writing particularly as a BIPOC woman, Black, Indigenous, person of color, woman. And you can just feel this resonance, this like, oh, yes, I need this story of Yael. And would you listen to this poem with me? They told me, be obedient like Ruth, cry like Hannah, be pretty like Esther. But I choose to be Yael, delivering liberation with my bare hands and the tools necessary to rebuild the house. It's Yael. She does the work. And while we may tend to miss her and miss this part of the story, we may shut it off too soon. Deborah and Barak do not. They do not. They celebrate her. They call her out for her contribution. They say, yes, yes, she is the most blessed of women, of tent-dwelling women. There's no power struggle. Aren't you so used to the power struggles? It's always power struggles, but not here. Here we see them doing it right. Because while we may miss it as the church, we may miss it as leaders, we may miss it in our community at times, they're not missing it. They know that Yael is the point of the story, not them.
Yeah, that's so, so beautiful. And the story of Yael reminds me of a story of a dear friend of mine. He worked in ministry in a large church in Southern California. And I honestly think, I've spent a lot of years in ministry, but I honestly think he is the best person in ministry I've ever seen. And here's why. He was the type of person that would literally make the kid, because he worked in youth ministry, he'd make the kid that was on the outside feel at the center. And at times, quite literally, I would watch a student come into youth group, stand in the corner, kind of nervous, clearly not the cool kid. And as time went on, this student would literally move towards the center of the group. Not only would the student feel welcomed, but the student would be celebrated, would be asked, oh, how can you help lead? And some students, yeah, would go beyond the outside, beyond feeling welcomed, to being a leader. And it was just this remarkable thing that my friend was able to do. And I've never seen someone in ministry do it like him. But this friend of mine, he wasn't really concerned with social climbing. He was never the cool kid growing up. He has his quirks that are so amazing.
We gotta love the quirks.
We love the quirks, yes. And this friend of mine was overlooked. His church was really concerned with social status. They're really concerned with being the cool church, serving the cool people. And so as time went on, my friend was doing this incredible work in ministry where the outsider felt like an insider, and the insiders were learning and growing as well. And it was this incredible, liberative work of ministry. But his church missed him, and other people would get promotions. And at times, the staff on his church were even mean to him or bullied him. It was really, really alarming and upsetting. And this friend of mine, eventually, like after the way he was being treated, decided to leave. And he was devastated. He didn't want to leave. He loved the ministry. He loved the students. And it was really, really sad. And really, really upsetting. And I watched him suffer from years with how he was treated by his own church community and what felt like a second home to him. And this story isn't completely healed. This friend of mine, there's still wounds there, but because this friend of mine, again, is just such an incredible human, he has been forgiving these people from the start. He is such a kind, kind soul, and he's always been forgiving them. And as time has gone on, there have been people from this church that have literally been crying, weeping, saying, "We are so sorry for the way we are treated. We're so sorry we missed you and chose the social climber, the one that was less caring and more concerned with status. We're so sorry." And forgiveness and healing has been happening. And this friend of mine is stepping into leadership and ministry and reclaiming autonomy and authority. Yeah. And so I share this story to paint a picture. This friend of mine was the Yael in his community, doing this incredible work in ministry, bringing liberation and healing, and his community missed him. And we are in communities where there are Yaels in our community that are doing the incredible work of the gospel. And right now, you might feel like you're someone in your church that's being missed, or in your community that's being missed. Or you might be someone that feels like, wow, I've missed the person next to me. But there are Yaels in our community that we cannot overlook, that we don't want to leave beaten down, feeling missed. They might not benefit our social status. They might not benefit our scripts or hierarchy or systems of power. And that's the point of this story. Of Yael is this unexpected leader amongst our midst.
Yeah.
So that warning that Deborah gave to Barak, that so often has been translated as a punishment. Hey, if you're cowardly like this, you're not going to get the glory. When was it about the glory anyway? When was that the point? What Deborah is saying to Barak is a realistic statement of what it means to follow Jesus, what it means to live into the kingdom of God. It's not about the glory. And especially for any of us, though, any of us here this morning who lean more towards the side of privilege, we would recognize we have some privilege. We have some position. We have some titles or some degrees to our name. It's a word for us, a realistic challenge. It's not about you. It's not. Are we ready to follow Jesus? To have a Deborah heart, a Barak heart? In Philippians 2, it says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, in other words, he got it, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. No, he made himself nothing, taking on the nature of a servant, being found in human likeness, humbling himself, becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. It's not about us. This is the kind of radical humility that topples status quos, but frees up communities to go together. Yeah, and do just amazing, the amazing redemptive work that God has given them. Who are we called to go with? So just the question as we finish today, where is Jesus meeting you? You might be more of a Yael. That's the character that you resonate with in the story. And Jesus is meeting you on the margins, saying, rise up. I see you, my Yael. Go. Be strong. Maybe you're more of a Barak, and he's inviting you to some radical humility. To admit your need, that you can't do it on your own, and that is actually completely okay, because there are some amazing partners to join you in this work. Maybe he's inviting you to love fiercely, to cultivate the people around you, to sing just incredible, fierce songs of wonder and joy and hope over them, the way that Deborah does. Wherever Jesus is meeting you this morning, man, let's keep joining him as he flips the script.